The broadcasts of the legal proceedings surrounding the Florida vote are exposing us to some confusing legal language. Our linguist Jeff Nunberg has some thoughts about legalese.
When the Florida Supreme Court ruled that the Secretary of State had to provide more time for hand recounts, George W. Bush was quick to react. The court had rewritten the law, he said, and cloaked its ruling in legalistic language. That last bit might have raised a few eyebrows. In the circumstances, it was a little like criticizing the Pope for cloaking his encyclicals in Latin. But no politician ever went far wrong taking on lawyers in their language, and nowhere more so than in modern America. In a curious way, it's a reflection of the obsessive interest we have in our legal institutions. Take the Italians, for example. They don't tell lawyer jokes the way we do, but then they don't make media stars out of people like Judge Judy or Johnny Cochran, or devote a whole TV channel to running nothing but court proceedings in numbing detail. And in the end, they don't have the kind of trust in their legal system that Americans do, or spend nearly as much time litigating their disagreements. In Italy, taking somebody to court is a fool's errand. That paradoxical attitude about the law carries over to the way we think about its language. Of course, there's plenty to make fun of. Legal language is like one of those dialects they're supposed to speak in remote Appalachian hollows. It's a kind of para-English that branched off from the main shoot of the language in the late Middle Ages and has set up an independent existence. Now it lives in respectable secession from the reality that the rest of us inhabit. To be sure, lawyers are aware that this is a problem, and in recent years there have been efforts to rewrite statutes and consumer documents in language that people can understand. Even the Supreme Court has toned down some of its more baroque linguistic effects. The legal scholar Peter Tiersma noted that over the decades there's been a consistent decline in the court's use of words like hereunto and aforesaid in its opinions. Still, it isn't likely that lawyers are ever going to wind up speaking just like the rest of us. Part of this is just economic self-interest. As Tiersma observes, lawyers feel more comfortable about billing their clients $250 an hour for advising them of something than for simply telling them about it. The main reason why lawyers cling to their language, though, is that they like to think it's more precise than ordinary English. But actually, a growing number of legal scholars have begun to question that point. And after sitting through the O.J. trial, the impeachment proceedings, and now all the Florida election cases, you'd think that the general public would have begun to have some doubts about the precision of legal language as well. Does anybody still think that lawyers have a clearer hold on the meaning of their word discretion than we do on the meaning of ours? Sometimes, in fact, the language of the law is more obscure and ambiguous than anything that everyday English has to offer. Take the simple word shall that appeared in that crucial Florida statute about when the Secretary of State was supposed to certify the results. It's one of the most bizarre turns of the whole affair that the election of an American president might depend on the interpretation of a word that closed its run as a productive element of American speech around 1916, the year that Henry James died. But lawyers keep inserting shall into contracts and statutes as if the imperatives of law were too sacrosanct to be rendered by a verb that ordinary people still use. It isn't as if shall is more precise than the other words. In fact, Black's Law Dictionary says that the word can mean must or may or will or should, depending on the context. And right now, there are lawyers lined up three deep behind each of those interpretations, all because the Florida legislature wouldn't stoop to writing a statute that began, "The Secretary of State has to." In Australia, they've taken the step of banishing the word shall from their statutes, but I don't know if that move would have much support here. As one legal scholar put it, shall is a totem that serves to conjure up the flavor of the law. And the public has its own reasons for wanting to keep legal language separate from the hurly-burly of ordinary usage, the same way we want the courts to be above the partisan fray. That was doubtless what was going through the minds of the Florida legislators as they debated what their role in the drama should be. They kept talking about the need to bring conclusivity to the process. That has only a tenuous claim to being a word. You won't find it in either the OED or Black's Law Dictionary. It does pop up occasionally in statutes as a pretentious substitute for conclusiveness, but that wasn't how the Florida legislators were using it. What they really meant to say was something like, we have to bring finality to the process, or what people nowadays like to describe as closure. But they wanted to invest the notion with a feeling of legal certainty, and the word conclusivity had the sound of an incantation that will lay everybody's doubts to rest. And in a sense, they're right. The whole business has gone the way protracted legal proceedings always do. Palm Beach, Miami-Dade, Seminole, postmarks, Chads and Dimples, things have gotten so messy and complicated that nobody thinks it's still possible to determine who actually got the most votes. What matters is who carries the day in court. In the end, win is a legal term, too.
Jeff Nunberg is a linguist at Stanford University and the Xerox Palo Alto Research Center.